travel all
so over. So during the pandemic, the cruise industry actually made some boost up Juneau. Because that's gotcha. So all those little shops are this cruise industry, like tchotchke shops. But when the cruise industry wasn't there during the pandemic, it was like,
all right, we are live. So we are going to call to order the City Council work session for Tuesday, July 28th, 2026. Start off with the topics of discussion. Quarterly update from fire and police departments.
I go first.
Okay.
Mayor, members on the council, this is the quarterly update. This for tonight, I did combine quarter one and two just to give you a snippet of where we're at up to today. Our total dispatch activity is at 8,348. That's a 7% increase from the same time last year. A little bit over 500 more calls. That may not seem like a lot, but when we're usually right around the 16,000 mark, that's a pretty big jump for us. The trends we're seeing, the three most common non-criminal calls, similar to past quarters, medical is number one at 445, check the welfare is number two at 159, and animal complaints are third at 124. Our three most common criminal calls, number one is theft of movable property, number two is theft by swindle. Number three is misdemeanor domestic assault. And then our total arrests for the first two quarters was 176, which is about a 3% decrease from the same time last year. The top five common arrests, warrants were number one at 21. Misdemeanor domestic assault were number two at 13. Theft of movable property at 10. DWI 9, and driving while canceled, inimical to public safety at 8. That's a gross misdemeanor.
What was that word?
It has to do with drinking and driving. So if you've had so many offenses, then you're canceled, inimical to public safety. So it's a higher level offense tied to prior drinking and driving.
Thought you had a stroke.
Yeah. Some other, if you're canceled or revoked or suspended, usually that's a misdemeanor. But when you get that addition to it, that moves it to a gross misdemeanor. Our analysts had a note here. You guys know Jamie. She does all of our data analyst work for us. And she had a note for me to share that we have been receiving an increased amount of intel regarding possible gang activity in Ramsey related to violence among East African juveniles and young adults. Some of these groups have caused concern with other metro cities due to the reckless usage of firearms and overall disturbance to the community. And then the bullet points under that are we've had Ramsey residents who are suspects in burglaries and in other cities, possibly gang-related, that we've identified live here. We had an event at a local venue in Ramsey where we identified the groom being a known gang member who had been in a recent shooting in a different metro city. And through the work with Jamie and her crew, we were able to reach out to the... I contacted the venue owner and the business owner, and they declined to host it, which led to a domino effect where they kept going to different cities to have their event, and those cities also declined. And it was very appreciative of her work catching that early, so we didn't end up being the one holding that. We had a Ramsey resident report that they weren't able to have their young infant sleep well at night because of some disorderly gatherings. The resident advised they're afraid of a certain group due to their reckless behavior, and with pulling some Ring doorbells, there may be some possible gun involvement with this group. So we're doing some extra patrols and further investigation into that. And then just at our local sports areas, just like other metro cities, when we have more youth gathering and playing sports, violence can occur after these or during these events. As far as traffic enforcement goes, total accidents are at 170, which is an 8% decrease from last year. And total traffic stops are at 2,286, which is a 27% increase from last year. A couple of case highlights. We had our first drone deployment. The Anoka County Sheriff's Office SWAT team, where we have two operator members and one negotiator member on that team, they asked for assistance They had learned about a murder suspect from another state that was staying at a residence in Ramsey, and we flew our drone to provide overwatch while they apprehended that individual. And then another case, just an interesting case. We had a spree of theft from vehicles occur in the spring, with multiple vehicles being tampered with and stolen from. One of the wallets was taken and used at a Target in another city, and we were able to get the video or the picture of that person using the card. And our analyst, we make bulletins to share with other police departments. She sent that out, and an analyst in another county took that picture and used facial recognition and figured out who the person was for us. And so that followed up with charges and solving that string. And then the last part I'll share with this is a new area. We've talked about it a little bit with mutual aid, with us helping other agencies and them helping us. What we realize is we track how often we help other people, but we don't track how often they come and help us. So this is just a one-sided look at that. We assisted law enforcement 100 times in the first two quarters, non-law enforcement 13 times, and the Department of Transportation once, so 114 assists. And I'm happy to, as always, answer any questions or always take feedback on what kind of things you guys want for these quarterly updates.
Questions, comments, feedback?
Eric. Question, besides the gang activity stuff, which is concerning, the thing I focused on first for that was, unfortunately, was the animal disturbances. Animal complaints. What is that broken down to? Like just barking or running through the neighborhoods or people not leashed up or... What is that?
Correct. That could be, and I don't know exactly right now, but I could follow up with you. But the things that come to mind for me would be dog at large, most common. Like you said, could be dog bites as well. At the park, the no leash. Yep. Parking dog disturbing.
It'd be nice to figure out what that is. Maybe get that information out to folks. That
sure.
Your dog's leashed up or inside your fence or something like that.
Yep.
You're welcome.
Other questions? Comments?
Theft by swindle, that covered the crypto stuff that was happening.
Correct. Yeah.
Anything else? All right. Good overview. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Appreciate it.
All right. On to fire.
Good evening, Mayor, House members. First 2.5 months have been outstanding here, and so I feel like I've really got to know our crew quite well, and we have an outstanding group, and I'm going to touch on that right away here. Just a feel-good story that we have. Unfortunately, we had a house fire here just a week and a half ago up on the north end of town. Our quick response actually helped save that house and the content within in the house. They're going to be able to go through room by room and hopefully save quite a bit of the material that's inside of the house. It's just a contest to our crew is getting there quickly and setting up our water supply. We didn't have hydrants at this location, so it was important to get our neighbors intact. We had 6 departments that showed up, so our mutual aid was where we needed the help from. We did lose water supply for just a couple minutes at one point, and we were able to reestablish that through our tenders. A feel-good story comes from the homeowners when they were able to walk through the house at the end and see how much material actually they were able to salvage. They were quite thankful because the look from the street was a lot different story. And so they were very thankful for the efforts that our team put together that night to save as much of that property as they possibly could. The days to come, our fire marshal was out on site even the next morning. It was an all-night fire, but he was out there at 7 a.m. the next morning completing his investigation and helping the family kind of get to that next step. The homeowner reached out to us personally and thanked us and thanked Chris for his willing to go above and beyond that call of duty and help them get through those next steps. And that's what we are. We're here to help people. We're here to be in their shadow when they're having bad days. And we want to make sure that they understand that we're always going to be here weeks down the road if need be. So it was a great response by our team. and we were able to save quite a bit of material for this family. So some young kids, luckily the smoke alarms were working, because it would have been a completely different story if our smoke alarms weren't working in the house. So great outcome on the end. We were able to save quite a bit. So on to our operations here. Through the first call or first half of this of the year, we're at about 1,200 calls compared to 1,300 last year. So we're actually down 6% right now, which is great. Still running about 80% medicals right now. Other services are going to be our rescue, and fires are actually down quite a bit. We our total fire loss or damage is down this year compared to last year at this time, which is great. That means our prevention and education is working, but people are also understanding the severity of fire safety and making sure they're walking through some things, thinking about stuff before they're actually acting, which is awesome. No real significant trends at this time other than our medicals. We see a lot of lift assist right now that we're working countywide with. Teams are trying to come up with ideas and ways to help out our senior centers. So lift assist and just difficulty breathing, any type of breathing issues, especially during this heat. We're seeing the uptick in that type of medical at this time. We're still really condensed between that 6 a.m. And 10 p.m. Time frame for our calls. We don't see a whole lot of overnight stuff right now. Our new engine will be completed hopefully late December. We're going to be running out to Rosenbauer in Wyoming, the city of Wyoming, in September to take a look at that progress and see how that truck is running. But hopefully a delivery date at end of December, early January. Our staffing, we have five new recruits that are starting our EMT classes next week, and they are going to be adding to the department here hopefully mid-November. And then with that said, that we are looking to hire some more cadets here late November for early January academy. We are starting to have some conversations with the city about potential SAFER grants in the future. And those SAFER grants are grants that would allow us to look at opportunities to hire more resources within our department, full-time members. That would help get us to a point where our leadership, and I'll talk about our experience levels right now, but our leadership to be where it's at, where it's got to be at every scene. With our membership committee right now, our paid on call, we're actually on a trend right now that's going to bring us down to roughly 5.5 years of experience as an average in our department. In the next six months, we're looking at having about 5 to 6 retirements. These are seen members that are at that 20-year mark or at the 10-year mark that the fire service is just it's a hobby for them, and they got to the point where they are ready to retire. But those years of service are hard to find right now in the fire service itself. And so we're right now our average years of experience is about 9.5. We'll lose almost 55 years of experience with these members as they retire. So looking into the future, our duty crews are getting younger and younger, and we have to have that leadership that's on every scene or available at every scene. And so we're starting to think outside the box as far as that future trend goes. Training, we've got a new training officer that started, training chief that started here this year, and he has been doing some outstanding stuff with our crews, getting them up to training locations outside of Ramsey. That has helped us clear up some driving issues that we had early on. We also are getting reimbursed now by the state for a lot of our trainings that is occurring. Which Chad has been able to bring in about $13,000 back into our community for the training that we would have to do already. And so it's been a huge asset to have our training officer out there doing what he's designed to do, is help bring our crew up to date on certifications, but then also try to get reimbursement from the state that's available for us. We are kind of switching over to an EMT style, from a first responder to an EMT, because of the medical drive that we see. That does cost much more, but it also does benefit our crew and our community the most, because we're starting to see more and more of these medicals. So that EMT skill and certification is going to be something that every single new hire is going to be going through from here on out. As far as our fire prevention, our education, I got an opportunity to go to safety camp last week, and it's outstanding to see that how that all entails with police and fire. It was really cool to see the youth really take on to the group. A lot of fun educational material that was out there for the youth. We also do at home or home alone kind of style for teenagers. That was also awesome to see the safety speech that comes with that. But we're still, our crews are really pushing hard the smoke alarm and carbon monoxide installation and education across town. So we are going to continue to drive those home and make sure that we don't have any homes that don't have any protection. So we're seeing an uptick in public events coming across our board, which is great. We want to be out in the community. So if there's anybody that that does reach out to the department, we are trying our best to get out there and help with any type of education or event that is out there. So that is all I have for my first update. So any questions?
Questions, comments?
Good job.
Thank you.
I was out there during safety camp coaching some soccer, and it looked great. You guys did a great job. Brought everything out of school.
So you were not an attendee?
I was not an attendee, no. But I probably should have been. I should probably be safer. All right. Anything else for this? If not, moving on to the continued review of the preliminary 2027 general budget levy, item number two.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Handed out several items. Some of them were in your packet and some have been updated. So I guess I'm going to start with the colorful one that just came in. I just received the numbers from the county. That's kind of why the scramble. And so if you compare the first two, I don't know if you got an updated one. If you just compare the very first two, you'll see the numbers didn't change much. So the first one represents what the county numbers, and the second one is just staff's estimate, so fairly close. And they always like to say these are not final numbers for their estimate right now. So, because I was asking her to get them for me, so she has kind of sent them over without making sure that everything is right to the penny. So as of right now, and I'll go over shortly, we're looking at a 6.13% increase from the last meeting. And so the tax capacity that you see on the sheet represents a 47.28 in comparison to 2026. The final was 46.19. And at the next work session, I will, based off of where we end for the levy, I will do a presentation or do that update for the effect of the taxpayer. And, of course, I'm doing strictly Ramsey only. So the next one, it says 2027 preliminary. This is just kind of an overall summary of everything. So the very first page is what makes up our levy and what is it in comparison to last year. And when I did the sheet, you'll note that I didn't have the Anoka County values, so as they just came in. So this is just kind of an overall summary of everything that's in the budget. And the last pages are just a quick synopsis of each of the department's budget. So if it increased, kind of what items were in it. And it's just pulled directly off of the budget document as a whole. So I'm not going to go through that. It's just for your reading. I'm sure you have plenty of time to read these budget documents. So the next sheet is this big, huge sheet. This is the one that shows the starting budget and then what has been taken out. So that's on the far left. And then I broke out the capital separate from it because we were talking about other funding sources. So the capital that is still in is on the right side. The capital that has been removed is on the left. So any items removed has been on the left, or it's had other funding sources. And so from, I guess I'm going to look at the items that have been removed on the left side for right now from the last meeting that we had. So I'm going to go just over the items. The comp plan has been removed. Staff is going to prepare that in-house. And it was at $100,000, but there was a $40,000 grant that is out there. So that's the net of the $60,000. The wellness sauna and the massage chair, or wellness massage chair, are still included in the budget, but they have other funding sources. It's going to come from the drug task forfeiture fund. And I guess if you have any questions in regards to that fund, Brad is here to explain more in regards to that. This three squad replacement setup, that is, the three squads are under the capital, which is going to be funded from the HRA fund. So I did include the setup of those squads now to come also from the HRA, core HRA fund. And then the indoor drone, that has been removed because we did receive a grant. The salt is came in at about a $24,000 reduction just based off of need from what was presented. The street maintenance position has been removed. And then the pavement management levy, so I reduced it by $200,000, so we won't be levying the full 5%. And the $200,000 is coming from the excess revenue transfer to the PIR fund last year, which came from the general fund budget. So it's going over to that fund. So I thought it would make sense to help offset the 27 levy. And so the next box below is basically what we would need to do or reduce it by. I know council had made the direction of 5%, so we would be looking at almost another $264,000 in reductions. And the 6% would be a $30,000 reduction. And then as you get higher, you can see that actually you'd be adding back in. So I know the direction from council was at 5. We thought bringing the little over 6 would be a good start for council to begin with, basically. So under the capital, the items that have been removed from what you've seen, and granted, all these are being pushed to 28 for discussion, but again, they'll become part of discussion when we're doing the budget and levy. The item that has been removed is the new 6-block license plate readers. That is totally out of the budget and levy and not on the CIP either. Correct, Brad? Okay. And so the funding then below represents how the capital is funded. So $50,000 from the fleet fund, the capital equipment fund, $585,000, and the core HRA fund of $1,171,170 to make up the $1,806,170. And I did include all the cash flows as part of your handout, and I'm not going to go over there right now because I'd like to just continue on with the items that are on the sheet. So if we go over to the right side, they kind of highlighted then in blue. Those items that basically they're on, but you can't do away with them because we do have contracts or it needs to stay in place because we have to continue on with their operation. Those items in red are still the new positions or reclasses that have been asked for. As I noted, the street maintenance worker has been removed from that list. And this list still does include the market rate increase for all staff, so AFSCME, LELS, and non-union. And it is the market rate increases for most positions, except for the LELS, has been based off of the average of the high low of 20 comparable cities. And then down below on the far right is the items that are remaining in per capital request. So the new requests are those that are in purple. I took the green off because I thought it was hard to read. So I guess I would stand for it. Any questions on this list?
Dan?
Just so I understand, so we're getting 24 laptops, but 17 we're waiting on? Is that?
There was a total, so thank you, Councilmember Speck. So there was an original request of 41.
Okay.
And so there's 17, we're looking at it, that's probably easier to split them in half so you're not getting another that amount in like 5-7 years replaced. Okay. So 17 will be going to police and 7 to fire. And the fire is currently looking at getting a grant for their 7. And then in 28, the other remaining 17 will come as part of the capital request.
Do you happen to know how often we replace them? If you don't, that's okay.
That was on the capital sheet.
That was okay.
And it is 7 years. And they're 8 years old right now.
Okay.
That's a long time.
Yeah, that's definitely needed.
Maybe Chief Bumble can speak a little bit more to this would slightly change the operations and kind of talk to that.
Yeah.
Thanks, Brian. This idea of replacing laptops came from an officer, and when it's first presented to me, I said no to it because they had the idea that every officer should have their own laptop. I was talking to Jason from IT, and he initially had the same response. But then after he and I started talking a little further, we realized that by doing one laptop per officer, we would eliminate a whole host of duplicate computers. So right now they have office workstations, and then they have their squad laptop. We have, for example, we have a computer in the evidence room. We have another one in the detention area. So Jason did a nice job of putting it all on a spreadsheet, and when we actually looked at numbers, there was a lot of benefits to the idea. And so we apologized to the officer and rekindled the idea. But the some other things that are a benefit, we've learned over time that shared use doesn't work as well for police officers, and that if they can have something assigned to them, it's going to last longer. The current laptops in the squads are 8 years old. They're taking 15 to 20 minutes to boot up. So they're starting when they walk in the door, they go to the locker room change, they're not even on the clock yet. And then if they have an issue and they're rebooting, you can see where I'm going, where this is not good when we're going to call. So instead of just keep doing it, because we did this 8 years ago when I was a captain and it helped greatly, we're trying to do something different. So if these computers cannot be on 24/7, they can take it home to do court or take it with them to training, checking emails, shut it off, and then they would just put it in their squad. And they're in the office, they would dock it. So there is some upfront costs for the docks. And we have demoed a couple of docks because when they bring their laptop in, they can stay connected to CAD, which is dispatch, and they can still see things that are happening where their partners are. I can keep going, but that kind of gives you a high level of where we landed here. The 34 was the number we needed. And so to just help, we don't want to break it up too much because if we go 3 years out, now we've run some of these laptops 24/7 for that first year, which we're going to do. But if we can do it in a two-year span to lessen the initial blow, and then we're set running that way.
Again, I'm not about adding stuff back to the budget, but I mean, would that be a big game changer, do you think? Would it be beneficial to get you the extra enough to get the 34 and get everyone kind of trained and started at the same time?
I think I would defer more to IT on that side. I mean, we can make this work. We need 13 minimum because that's the number of squads we have right now.
Yeah.
So I would, if I could talk to Jason more about that. Or.
Yeah, I would agree kind of the rollout from IT because it would be all done in-house.
Sure.
From a budget or a levy impact, these would be paid for over the core HRA, so it wouldn't necessarily change that. Right now, what's at 6.13%, it'd be just a fund balance adjustment.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, to actually just add that $55,000 back as much as I'm not. Usually don't like to do that direction, but you know, it sounds like a new program, so if it has any additional 10 to get them to 34, however many to get them to 34, so everyone has that. When you start the program, it, you know, it's worth the discussion.
Follow back up with IT to make sure they wouldn't hate us.
I see what IT's opinions too, but yeah.
Okay. Oh, I'm sorry. Chris?
I'm really liking what we have here this time. I mean, this is a good place for us to have a good discussion now. You know, I think last time it was too much to take in. So I really appreciate this. I guess just a quick question for you, Ms. Lund. The core HRA fund, I mean, are you comfortable with the way that it's being used and the way that you've projected that out? Does that make you feel comfortable?
Councilmember Riley, so if you want to open up the cash flows, it's the very first one. And so the numbers that are on here right now, so if you look at 27, the number in red, that is the request that's coming in for the capital right now. The number that's in 28 is what was requested in the CIP. So all the numbers that are from 28 to 35 are what's currently been requested in the CIP for those years, but the 28 adds back those items that have been taken out for 27. And so, yes, Councilmember Riley, you can see that it goes negative a little bit, and it's strictly based off of estimates right now, and it's not great. And I did add back in the chiller on here because I did talk to our building maintenance, and there was three large items that are coming on. The chiller, he had said originally that it was $1 million, so it's $600,000. And then under the facility fund that I handed out to you, it's the third one back. In for 27, it will be part of the CIP request, is the building automation system at $400,000. And then there's going to be the boiler in 29 of $350,000. So I wanted you to see our facility fund is basically down, not to, or it's getting really down there once you factor in these capital items on this building. And this could just be the start with our buildings because, unfortunately, everything's starting to get old and it's going to be, need replacement. I do not have the cost of a roof on here, and our building maintenance was saying that this roof and probably the fire stations is probably in about 10 years. So that will be a major cost that will be coming down the line. And so, yes, I do feel comfortable that we've spread out more now on the HRA. And then also that I did get that chiller air conditioner, at least on here, too. And I did include also then the policies, again, for what those funds can be used for. So you are following what that policy says for capital equipment and items in the CIP.
Thank you.
Dan?
I just want to clarify. So on page 3 of this one, it says the proposed budget is $24,979. Like, now this one has $24,769. Is it? I think you. Is it this one? This sheet here that has the and the 6.13 increase, right?
The budget is 24. The general fund budget is $24,979. Yes. So there's the budget, and then there's the levy.
Because that's coming from the HRA fund and the core funds. Gotcha.
And so the total levy, so they are fairly close. The total levy is $24,769,454. The general fund budget is $24,979,570.
Are we accruing interest in any of these funds that are sitting here? Do we?
Yes. If you note, there is a line item that says interest earnings on them, mm-hmm. on each of the funds.
Okay. These are all capital expenses. Is there any? Have we? I'm sure we've done this, but have we looked at shifting any of these to like operational expenses and putting them on a lease instead if the interest we're accruing on our fund is greater than the interest that we'd pay on a lease?
Leases actually always end up being more expensive, it seems like. And I haven't looked at leases because I'm not sure in regards to, because I think like with Axon, is that considered more like a lease?
Yeah, it's a contract, 5 or 10 years.
So that is an item that's going to be $113,000 for the next 3 years, what? 5 years. That's going to be on. So that is part of your maintenance items that is included. So that's why that one is in blue.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, I mean, leases can be hard to get off to as well. Just thinking sometimes, you know, the first, if you had $1 million, you put it on a 4-year lease, that's $250,000 plus interest. But you retain that. fund balance, which you gain interest off. So I'm just curious if there was a, like an equation to see at what point the lease becomes less profitable, because initially you'd be spending less of your fund balance, gaining interest on that higher fund balance versus the interest you're paying on the lease.
Well, and I think right now, too, you're using the funds that we currently have, which is what they were meant to be used for, because that was why we called back TIF 14, was to help fund our capital items.
Yeah. All right.
Kirsten?
How much money do we have in our drug task forfeit fund, and how do we usually use that?
Yeah, Councilmember Pusher and Mayor, we have mainly two forfeiture funds. So we have alcohol forfeiture and drug forfeiture. Because of some changes in laws, the alcohol forfeiture has gone down quite a bit. And alcohol forfeiture, you're required to use it for specific things. It has to be used towards enforcement, education, or alcohol specifically. The way we come across alcohol forfeiture funds is mainly forfeiting a vehicle after so many DWI arrests. Because that has gotten to a higher offense level, we don't take them in as often. And in the past, we've used that to even purchase a squad car, the entire squad car, and set up when we had if you remember back, we had a dedicated DWI enforcement officer under a grant, and then we used some of that money. The other funds we take in are drug forfeiture funds, which are also from, could be a vehicle where a drug arrest is made, or cash in that vehicle or on the person. And those funds don't have the same restrictions as alcohol do. And so I can get the exact number. I think last time we had updated numbers, I think there was about $8,000, maybe a little less than that in alcohol forfeiture, and maybe $19,000 in drug forfeiture. Those are estimates.
Just wondering if you wanted to talk about the importance of those pieces of equipment that you'll be using the drug forfeiture fund for.
The sauna and massage chair. That's a good time.
Yeah.
Yes. Thank you, Councilmember Busher and members of the council. I completely understand what that looks like and why there was reactions to those on the list 2 weeks ago. I'm not going to be asking for a spa day or manicures or pedicures for the officers in the future, but
I was ready to give them to you.
So this is going to take a couple minutes, but I do think it's worth your time, if that's okay.
Yeah.
When I went to training last year in Virginia, 3 of my 6 classes were related to wellness. And the first was leading at-risk employees for executives. The second was leading well, authentic leadership through wellness. And the third was wellness and fitness law enforcement. And I know it's kind of a fad to focus on wellness right now, but there's a reason for it. And the things our officers do, and I'm not trying to be sappy, they choose this, but it does affect them. And so if there's any way that I can do things that can combat those effects that they get, then I'm going to be all for it. And so even though I knew how this would be viewed on paper, I still put it down. And it wasn't just, like I told you before, throwing something at the wall to see if it sticks. When we get ideas from officers, sergeants, they come to the captains and I meet. And when we present our budget, I'm saying that I do believe this is best for the department, both for the officers, citizens, and taxpayers. And so the reason I feel that way about these two things is there's science-based research to show it's not just about them feeling good. It changes something in their bodies when you expose them to heat, for example, after a really bad call. And it can help them long-term with not having some effects that affect them, their spouses, their kids. And I'm happy to email that out. I won't go down that road tonight. But if you believe there are positive benefits from it, then that's why you're seeing it here. The sauna is more of a new thing. The massage chair is kind of becoming more standard in police departments. And both of them are part of a bigger discussion of me wanting to put a wellness room in our police department. They're called different things, Zen Dens, Calm Space, and there's some stigma attached to them, but there is a real benefit to doing it where we can help these guys and girls. And the example I like to use is, you know, you can do an audit of your life in a simple way, and it's not perfect, but you look at your bank statement, and we spend money on what's important to us. And if your home's important to you, you can find places on your bank statement that are there. If your kids are, you're going to see stuff in their sports. Whatever it is, it kind of reflected that way. And when I was going through our budget and looking at it, we are doing things, but I think it's also important that it continues that way. And you are seeing two price items on here that are additions, but what you're not seeing is the $9,000 to $11,000 that we removed for heart checkups. So we had started a program under Chief Caters where we had done some heart assessments for officers, and it wasn't what we had hoped it to be. So we removed that this year, and that's where you're seeing these two things get added in. You look at Ramsey calls, and you know they're changing, and they may not seem, you know, we're not out dealing with officer-involved shootings, thankfully, all that often. But what we do is simple things like CPR. And when officers touch someone that needs CPR and they're looking at a lifeless face and the family's pleading with them, that affects them. And most people go their whole life, thankfully, never having to do CPR. But we have officers that have done it 20 times in a year. And so if they can come back, and my vision would be this isn't free time to just sit in a chair, but instead of their already allowed workout on duty time, they could use a chunk of that to sit in a sauna or sit in a massage chair in a quiet space that's dark and help them reset. Then, and this might seem like a harsh 90-degree turn, but there are financial benefits too. There's, you know, one of these items, we spend more than that outfitting a new officer. And so if we can keep from having to, the cycle of having to replace officers because either they choose to be done in this profession because it's just too much or it's been too much, or worse than that, they stay in and they're just not being effective. And they're not the way we want to the citizens when they're on calls. And so, yes, I understand maybe we can't do both these this year. And it's in another bigger discussion, you know, when it comes to with Chief Winkle of us looking at maybe, we're outgrowing our spaces, doing a combined police and fire training center and then having a built-in sauna there someday. And that's all great, but I do think it's important. Our officers, there's a few of them that are, I'm glad we have some stuff in place because just like the update said, our calls aren't that simple. So that was a long answer. Thanks for sticking with me. And just so you know, I'm all open book on talking about this kind of stuff. So if any of you have any questions at all, please ask them now or in private. That's great.
Any follow-ups on that one?
No, but I do have another question.
Yep.
Are there any things that you had wanted to put in the budget this year, you didn't get in there, maybe want to see come up, or that you're coming up with creative strategies to get because you don't know if it'll come through the budget?
Yeah, thank you for asking that, Councilmember. There are things that we've talked about, and for the time's sake, I think I'm going to move forward with the budget that Matt, Chief Corner, had put together and focus on 27, 28 for our expansion. So we are looking at options, hopefully, with our turnout gear and trying to come up with a better solution for efficiency with how we're deploying our new sets of gear and who is getting it, how many sets we can get this year, stuff like that. So we're hoping by the end of the year that we'll have a better idea of how much it's going to cost us and where we can kind of play around with our current budget right now for our turnout gear. I think that's the biggest push right now for us is cancer-driven information that's coming out is really looking at turnout gear and trying to outfit our firefighters with another set of turnout gear. And to Chief Blummel, we've looked at a lot of this wellness stuff too as well. We have some really nice gym equipment, but our stuff is getting outdated too, and so one of the things that we'll be adding in, hopefully in the years to come, is a wellness package too as well that will help keep this equipment fresh, say. So
And as more information comes out on cancer for firefighters, we'll be updating our budget too as well. So, thank you.
Anything else on that one?
I will say, for the sauna massage chair, if you're putting it in there, I'm guessing it's, like you said, there's optics around it, but you're going to put it in there unless you thought it was worth it for the guys and gals. So that's good, especially when it's coming from that drug forfeiture money. I think anybody who pays any attention to wellness now, will, saunas are quite popular for a reason, so makes sense to me. Other questions? Chris?
I think maybe an easy one, but you need to talk quickly about why you're replacing a charger with a pickup truck. Like, what's the value of that?
Yes. Let's see here. So we have three items up for replacement. You'll see three squads, sorry. And the two bottom ones are 2021s, and then the one you're referring to is the 2023 Dodge Charger with the Ford F-150. They are all patrol vehicles, and they were looking for, we have one pickup right now for investigations, and it's proven to be helpful for hauling things back from search warrants or other things like that. And the, having a pickup on patrol, because it was the same price, the idea of being able to haul bicycles, found bikes, and things like that when the investigator isn't there around the clock to be able to grab the pickup.
And it works fine for patrols and high-speed chase or whatever.
Yes, it's pursuit rated.
There, that's the word.
Yep, and it's yeah, it's appropriate. Other agencies have gone to them for other reasons and in different cities as well. Chris, back to you.
Not to be left out.
Yeah.
So I guess it looks like you're replacing three vehicles, and I'll say it looks like early. I mean, they're still valuable with $8,000 and $10,000 value, and they're newer than I drive. Can you maybe touch on
absolutely
why they seem to be early?
Yeah. Thank you for the question, council member. So the three Tahoes, two of them are over 130,000 miles. As we know, we don't drive the normal to the gas station or the grocery store. We are responding to emergency. These vehicles need to be kept up in top-tip shape. Our mechanics at the garage, they do an outstanding job of keeping everything as good as they can possibly keep it. These two of them are definitely beyond that lifespan that we would want to drive these emergency in. They have started to show their age as far as the transmission goes, and we just don't know if we can trust them for another year. They were actually, two of them were on the docket for last year to be replaced, and we moved those forward a year, and so over 130,000 miles is pretty high for any type of response vehicle, we would say. And then the last one is actually my rig. That is at about 85,000 miles. And we would be able to resell these at a value to a fire department that would be able to use these. The cost of the Tahoes now has kind of gone through the roof. And so that's why we have actually kind of pushed to the pickup truck as well, one being cancer-driven information as far as keeping some of those carcinogens out of the Tahoes, because we are loading gear into these Tahoes. We're loading hose into the Tahoes right now currently, so the pickups are actually going to be beneficial during fire scenes or any type of hazmat scene as well. But overall, the age and the actual mechanical breakdown of the vehicle is starting to show its age on a couple of them. So, yes.
Are these carrying equipment?
These will be
F-350s?
Absolutely, yes. And the big thing about the F-350s is our current grass trucks right now have a actual skid that can be put into the back of the truck. So if any of the vehicles actually break down, we can take that skid out and put it into another truck now with the F-350s. Our air trailer that we have is an extremely heavy trailer. It's a dual axle trailer. that can only be towed by a larger vehicle. It does not work behind a Tahoe or an F-150. Let's just use those for example. The current boat, we have a boat that's going to be up for a renewal here. It's 22 years old, I believe. Sorry about the age, but we're up for a new boat as well, and we're looking at options that would not be suitable as a Tahoe or a F-150 towable unit. So we're looking at the future of where the department needs to be and where we can be most efficient with that stuff.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Quick question. But under the capital request, the 8 new pen tilted zoom fixed mounted security cameras in city parks, is that across the different parks then? Or is there just the splash pad ones?
Yeah. Mayor, Councilmember Swick, that's correct. These are going to be the same cameras that are going in at the splash pad. And the parks we're looking at are Elmcrest, Rivers Bend, and Central. So it'd be adding 3 more parks.
Okay. And then just to clarify again, these aren't the ones, and I'm probably going to be saying it incorrectly, but they're not the ones with AI enabled that are going to be reading facial recognition or any of that kind of stuff. They're just mainly to monitor and then...
They do not do facial recognition and they do not do license plates. These are called pan, tilt, zoom. There is software that comes with them where I would say it is AI driven, and that you can say we're looking for a red backpack.
Sure.
Or things like that to speed up searching through video. And they are Flock brand, just like our license plate reading and the ones going in at the waterfront.
Okay. Additional questions? Chris?
Diana, looks like legal line going up about 36% for the budget. You want to talk about that?
Yes, Councilman Riley, it's based off of the current contract that we have, and then also in regards to just the current activity, we do have a current, I don't know if Chief Blummel prefers to talk about it, but somebody that is using a lot of staff and legal time, and I don't assume that's going away anytime soon. I don't know. Can that be addressed or not?
Sure. The city has, so there will be a follow-up confidential email, so please don't ask questions in this setting, please. So the city has been sued by an individual in the city who has sued the city in the past and is suing the city again in relation to data practices matters, specifically in relation to police-related data. That particular individual also has an appeal before the Office of Administrative Hearings on disputes around what is in police reports and what that individual believes should or should not be in the police reports. We don't have the option to say, no, you don't get to appeal. It's something that they have the right to do under state law. And of course, if we're sued, we don't have the option to say, please don't sue us. The lawsuit has been turned over to the League of Minnesota Cities, so they will be picking up a large portion of that. It has just, as of Friday, been assigned to Jessica Shui as the attorney on that. And so it is likely that within the next couple of months there will be a closed session or two to update the council in more specificity on some of these things. But right now, we're sort of in the beginning phases. It's hard to know how long these things will go on. But it is correct. This particular individual has made hundreds of data requests, has done dozens and dozens and dozens of disputes around what's in the police report. So in other words, if the police report says the individual felt upset, I didn't feel upset, I felt something different, I felt frustrated, or whatever the word, you know. So some of those are things like that. Some of those are other edits that this individual is looking for. Yes, it is incredibly costly and time-consuming for everybody involved.
Okay. Yep.
There's one, I don't count, 6415, other equipment rental. Looks like tripling this year, the budget.
Okay.
Are you looking under the individual line item, or are you looking at the sheet? Because that is where Axon is located, is attached to it. So that's
This is a question like back to the actual budget. Like I was going like line by line or whatever.
Okay, because included in that number of the 6415, it does include PSDS, which is the JLEC cost increase of $50,470, and the Axon body cameras, and the fleet of almost $114,000. So those two together added across all the other departments is most likely what's causing that major change under that account.
Fleet 3 renewals with the size of the fleets as far as the number of body cameras.
Mayor, thank you. The Axon, this is for a 5-year contract with Axon where we have unlimited storage. A large part of that is storage. It includes our body cams and the video cameras in the squads. There's 5 cameras in every squad. And they replace the body cameras at 2.5 years and at 5-year marks, so that's kind of the lease of the physical body camera. The reason you haven't seen this for 4 years is because 5 years ago when we went with Axon, we had received funding that paid for the full 5 years at once. And so now we had to go back to them. We asked them to get us on, put fleet and body cams together. There was 2 options. We could do a 5-year or a 10-year package. I wasn't comfortable doing 10 years when it relates to technology, just not knowing where we'll be. So that's why there was a small savings to do the 10-year, but it was pretty minimal. And so that's why there's that large number this year.
Anyone else? Other comments about the budget in general, outside of specific questions? Kristen?
Probably just one more, actually, just for Chief Blummel on the overtime increases. I assume that's just because there's more activity in our city, and it may not relate to something, one thing directly, but just wanted to ask about that.
Yeah, thanks, Councilmember Buescher. That's correct, as he's heard in my very brief update. It's just the time and resources were needed to put in some of these different investigations, and looking back historically, just making sure we're not under budgeting in that area.
And if I can add, when they do overtime, like say for a special event, it doesn't go back against their overtime account. It normally goes against a police revenue account, and so it's not getting offset against that thing.
Thanks, Diana. So, for example, for Game Fair, we'll have officers out there that'll be paid under overtime, but then stay paid. Okay. Kristen?
Is this a good opportunity to talk about, I guess, like some ongoing things that maybe we should consider putting into this budget this season? Like, right now we're utilizing a police officer or CSOs, firefighters, or full-time fellows, as well as city staff members to kind of take watch at the splash pad, and I think it may be better suited for us to just have someone there that we're paying instead of paying for a larger budgeted staff member to be there.
Brian?
I think we can follow up a little bit later this evening. We do have some numbers on what that might look like, but from a budget time frame standpoint, we're early enough where we can build that in, depending on kind of the ideas that we put together some info on for the waterfront park. So
it's a case later on, probably after the city council meeting, since we're going through this.
Anything else? Recommendations?
We're, as presented, we're sitting at 6.13, was it?
Yes.
Thoughts on that? We got
Mayor, 6.13, and again, the union negotiations are ongoing. We'll hear a little bit more on those later this evening as well. So that market rate increase line item under the last line in the top right box, that can adjust slightly one way or the other as we get through there. But I think 6.13 is a close estimate at this point, if nothing else changes.
Okay.
Chris?
Well, I'm going to just reiterate, I'm really happy with what you guys did here. I didn't like what we had last week or last meeting. I think this is a whole lot better. I think we're kind of right about where we kind of want to be, or you know, suggested a different number, but I think this is pretty comfortable where we're at now.
You're comfortable moving forward with 6.13?
I mean, yeah, pretty well.
Okay, other thoughts? Kristen?
Do we have, I know it's really early for a lot of folks, but I remember last year we got numbers of, like, you know, presumed places that other cities would be at. Do we have anything like that this time around?
No, everybody's still in the process of working on their budget. Where other cities do, that will be part of the preliminary when they submit them in September. So that was actually, comes out as part of the final sort of thing. I do have the numbers of what they did last year, because that, of course, is final. But, yeah, I will not receive anything until... Actually, I do have a meeting with the county in the beginning, middle of August, and they kind of go around the room saying kind of what the cities are proposing to do. Not everybody answers, but I try to write down, and the county does send out just really quick what the people are submitting at that time. So I will get that to council based off of, I think it's August 12th, that meeting.
And do you suspect anything will happen at the county level that could potentially like shift these numbers significantly?
Our numbers will stay the same, basically, of what's submitted, because we're still just an overall percentage of, you know, what they do for our taxes. We still collect based off of our numbers. And you'll see it when I do all that whole spreadsheet type thing.
I think it was more like referring to if there's resources that the county provides that they will no longer be able to, and that we have to start taking over ownership of that.
I'm not aware that the county does anything in regards to us. I think they're being affected because of the state and federal programs or funding.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So I ask this every year, but it's, you know, I hear from the residents, so I'll just ask as well. So when will the development, I know it's like a year time frame or before it actually, before the new houses get on the tax roll, but things like Riverside South, or I know we've had a lot of new, larger buildings coming in. I think some of those are TIF areas, but when have those kind of been incorporated, or when are we going to see some increase?
It's a 2-year lag. So if they're being built today, it normally takes 2 years to come onto the tax roll.
So next year, should we see maybe a little bit less than of a need to increase because we have a greater breadth of...
It all depends on what the valuation is happening in regards to the housing as a whole. Back a couple of years ago, if you recall, they increased the commercial and industrial greatly, and everybody turned around and appealed it. And we had about $500,000-$600,000 in reductions last year in regards to those valuations. And so now every year they're appealing their values. And so those are still out there again for this year. But they should be minimal. But I think the county and just what's happening just in the market overall, they're not increasing greatly in value.
But adding, you know, I don't know, 100 homes or whatever, I mean, should...
It will always help out. But then you also have to look at the fiscal disparities. This year, if you look at on the sheet in the second column, last year we got $2,651,000 in fiscal disparities. This year it's $2,678,000. So $27,000 increase, not much. And we've always been a benefactor of the fiscal disparities. It's starting to level or go down, decrease.
And last question with that, and then I think I know the answer, but some of the new... Oh, go ahead, I'm sorry.
So kind of circling back to the new homes, and when we start to recognize that, I think when you look back at our average, we've been averaging about the same number of new homes. So from that standpoint, I don't think that we're going to see a massive increase in property value because of new homes, because we've been about the same, around 150, 175 a year. It really impacts just if the value themselves are increased. But I think the county is probably going to be a little bit more reserved from 2-3 years ago when everything saw a big increase, and then the next year commercial saw a big decrease again.
Right. And things like the hotel and other, you know, the restaurants, that's, are those in TIF areas? We wouldn't see them in the...
You'll recognize it in
the core HRA fund,
right?
But not the, total levy. But you know, like over the industrial park, a new building goes up over there, not in a TIF district. You'll recognize that on the, levy, the market value.
Is that 2 years for commercial as well, or is that residential?
Yeah,
everything. Chris?
Well, I was just going to point out that you just mentioned the core HRA fund. I mean, that's a huge benefit that taxpayers are receiving right now, because we're paying all of our capital expenditures are being paid through that rather than having to levy for them. So,
all right, so we should get on to the next case relatively soon so we can hear from the guests before we have to probably break for the council meeting, come back. As of right now, pending contract negotiations, we're at 6.13, so approximately. Is there anything that the council is looking to have removed from this budget to get us closer to 5? Is everybody here comfortable with 6.13? What are your thoughts on that?
I guess I'd like to see it lower, but I don't have anything in particular.
I would like to see it lower as well. That 5%, I think, is a good mark to hit. But looking for, we have a number in front of us right now. Who's up, Kirsten?
I think it's fair for everyone to say that they'd like to see it lower, but I'm not going to say that without any actual substance behind it, where I can't point anything out and say, this is what I want you to take. So I think it's just meaningless words for me if I say I want to see it lower, but offer you no advice on how to do that.
So we have 6.13 in front of us. Obviously, consensus isn't a vote. It gives them direction if they're sitting at a good spot when it's brought forward to be passed. Is there consensus on 6.13 as a number to aim for?
Thumbs
up. You said you're good. Yes. You said you're good. Chris is good. No? All right. Well, as of right now, you have consensus that this is a good point, not a starting point. As Chris said, I think it looks really good. Obviously, can't speak for the thumbs up, but it sounds like this is a good number, so maybe have some plans for flexibility in case things go up in other areas to offset it, so you don't find yourself stumbling into like a high sevens or something.
Six, seven,
yeah. But otherwise, sounds like this has been presented well and the numbers are agreed upon, so thank you for all the work there, and you'll be bringing it back.
I think unless something major pops up in the next week or so, maybe we'll skip the next work session and come back second work session in August with, I think we'll know a little bit more.
No, I was going to say, as part of the weekly update, I can send out the tax event. Because each one of you is part of that sheet. So I can do it based off the 6.1.
Yeah. All right, thank you for presenting all that. Moving on to item number 3, wage theft and project labor requirements. I don't know, depending on how much discussion we'll have, how much we'll get through this, but I suggest we start with our guests in case we need to come back. Kirsten?
I was actually going to suggest, since we have only about 20 minutes, and this is something I think that's pretty heavy, that since we now have no budget topic on the next work session, we could bring it back to the next work session when we have more time. I apologize to my guests for having hung out for so long here, but
It's been fascinating, right? It's been fascinating, right?
Very fascinating. And anytime you're in my presence, it's a present. So,
right.
But I would also, Daniel, I would also like to just maybe see if I can get consensus on our city staff having time between now and the next work session to sit down with that fair contracting group that came in for the last work session. And they are a group that works with developers and contractors of all kinds. It's not just one group or the other. It's everyone. That's who they work on behalf of. So then the city staff can learn more, kind of see what options we have, what mechanisms we have to enforce those options, so we're not just coming to the table maybe with nothing. There's maybe some things that you guys can look at before we get there. That's my suggestion.
before we go that route, are you still seconding it then? Okay.
Feedback, or what do you guys?
We can probably coordinate a meeting. I still don't know that we would necessarily do a draft policy or anything at this point, but I think we could find time for an hour or so to sit down and hear from them.
So you want to table this one?
Yeah, for until next meeting. And then, because I did note that there was something on the general session also that relates to the splash pad, and didn't know if we needed to talk about that before we accepted it on consent. And that would be concerning if we didn't get to it. So
it's just a pay up.
I didn't know if we needed to talk about
consent
it.
Consent agenda pay up.
Yeah, I think that's more technical, and this is more directional. So.
Okay, yeah, but that's my direction, I guess, or ask if people are okay with that.
If you're fine with it and you're going to second it again to come back onto the work session and your guests are good with that, then we can move on and table it till next time.
And I would also just ask folks here if they're willing to sit down with those folks also outside of this council meeting to talk more, just because it is pretty detailed information, and I think it would behoove all of us just to like learn a little bit more individually. You know, I'm just asking, you don't have to do it, but I think it'd be great.
I'm available for a Zoom call at some point.
Perfect.
Ryan?
First reminder, our next meeting is August 10th. It's a Monday. We had to move it because of primary election on August 11th, so I won't say that you guys already voted on this earlier in the year, but if you want to look back on the record, you were all aware once already.
No.
Oh, yeah.
August 20th.
I'm getting that pedicure that day.
No, you are.
I thought I was.
Now we all remember.
Wait, August 10th?
August 10th, Monday.
Okay. I think it changed. I don't think you mentioned that.
When the ribbon cutting is there the next day.
All right. Well, thank you.
I'm sorry, guys. I feel terrible.
It's all right.
Hopefully you're on the clock.
I was just about to get late.
Nope.
Thank you.
Talk to your union about that.
I also just want to mention, too, that like the folks sat down with Chief Blummel and his group, someone from the BCA as well as the building trades, did to do a training on some of this stuff. And so, as well as, you know, Sheriff Wise is planning to meet with Woody back there soon, and the county attorney is also taking up three attorneys for prosecution in the space. So I just want to remind people that this continues to be something that's really important, and we're moving it to the next meeting to make sure that we give it the time that's appropriate, and it's still really pertinent and urgent, especially with all the development going on here. So.
All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
On
thank
to
you guys. Sorry. Love you.
The next item four. The waterfront park.
Yeah, love you.
I think I can get to it.
Okay.
Mayor, Council, I think the essence of this work session topic is to brief Council on how we reacted to the unsanctioned swimming and the safety concerns that's associated with that, along with what we may consider for further deterrence and eliminating that problem in the future. So I'm trying to share a screen here. This always gives me fits. Oh, we're doing it. Good. There you go. Oops. I apologize. This way. So following the meeting, the last work session where we discussed this, we ordered the signs that night, and then about a week and a half ago, all the signs were installed, and they were around the park and also the storm pond, and the we also put snow fence, as everyone was aware, a safety fence around the storm pond, and then in two locations down to the larger pond. And then we also had added staffing, as we had discussed a few moments ago, to make sure the folks didn't breach the fence and go into the pond and swim. None of that has occurred. The signs are as shown here. And then additionally, we had placed signs, safety signage like this, encouraging folks to look out for one another and remain safe and not swim in unsanctioned spaces. And those are on every table out there, as well as on the interior of the restroom, so that parents are seeing that and being reminded. Additionally, we looked at a number of fencing solutions. I'll go through these really quickly. We have about six on tap. One included expanding the decorative fencing around this area, basically in association with the splash pad proper, and then potentially adding riprap, big 1 and 2 foot angular nasty rock all the way around that storm pond, so that if you're barefoot and in shorts, it would be very uncomfortable to consider even sliding down that bank going into the storm pond. That's about $250,000 endeavor. We looked at decorative full perimeter fencing all the way around that storm pond. That's $400,000. We looked at cable fencing. This particular iteration is 36 inch high. That is a little less than $200,000, again, only around the storm pond. And then 4-inch spacing rather than wider cable fencing all the way around that storm pond, a little less than $250,000. And the advantage of cable fencing is that it preserves the views into the beautiful little pond and the waterfall from around our the perimeter and the path that goes all the way around the pond. And then for good measure, we looked at split rail fencing. That's about $23,000. Not a good solution, we determined. And so we also looked at 42-inch regular wrought iron style fencing all the way around that. Another $250,000. That, of course, obstructs the view into the pond. And then at staff level, we ended up identifying that if we do want fencing around the storm pond, that we probably want to consider the entire east end of the pond as well, and that 42-inch cable fencing would be the best fencing solution for preventing wayward little wee ones to crawl through it, and then also preserving the views of the beautiful pond, and then also the small storm pond that has a waterfall and the landscape within it. That, with the cable fencing alone, is $692,000. And I'll just mention here that before we had the swimming concern, I wanted to add this area to our bistro-style seating by expanding the decorative fencing over to here, bringing it back to the trails or back to the sidewalk to create additional seating, one umbrella, several different bistro-style tables. That would provide another deterrent or, you know, a waypoint where folks might be tempted to get off the sidewalk, slide down the hill, and go into the pond. That is $50,000. So where we ended up with the, from the staff perspective, is that if we do want fencing, that we would include the expansion of this bistro area at $50,000, and then the 42-inch cable-style fencing all the way around the pond, together with the entire east side of the larger pond, again, would be $692,000. So to the point that was raised earlier, I ran the numbers as to what a park attendant might look like there. The slide calls it a park safety and maintenance attendant. And in a very generous annual view, we looked at a late spring start. Typically with splash pads, you think of Labor Day or Memorial Day to Labor Day. That's about 100 days season, not including rainouts, cold weather. But in a very generous look at this, if we started as soon as May 15, a 10 a.m. start to 8 p.m., that's about 280 hours. Summer, full day at 9 a.m. to 9 p.m., 500 hours. And then late summer, if we went as late as September 20th, that'd be about 189 hours. That totals 973 hours at $20 an hour equals about $20,000. And that, again, does not include rainouts, cold weather periods. And that an attendant there would also conceivably reduce some of her full-time maintenance costs or hours spent at the park, and would also provide other safety and secondary benefits to just making sure people don't swim there, but they'd be picking up litter, interacting with park visitors, and making sure other shenanigans don't occur there. This would be a seasonal worker. If people weren't complying with the no swimming, they would simply call 911 and ask for some help shagging people out.
No shenanigans zone.
No shenanigans zone. Yeah, we could even have signs to that effect.
Okay. Quick thoughts on this?
No.
No quick thoughts. Long thoughts?
No. Is the answer. How long? We just put up these no swimming signs, correct? And we're still having some swimmers?
None.
None. So we do not need to spend the money.
With the caveat, we've also had it fully staffed. So we've had a 10 there from, I forget what day last week we started it, whether full-time or part-time, both Saturday and Sunday. We haven't experienced anything, but we've had a city personnel there during the open hours.
I also don't know if an orange snow fence is a good permanent solution.
I don't think we should need a permanent solution. We have signs. We're obviously jumping faster than the people are understanding that they weren't supposed to be swimming in these areas. We put up our signs. Now we need to test the population, but you've put up orange barriers to dissuade them. So now if the orange barriers go down, are they jumping back in is where we have to test. I think parents and everybody that knows how to read should be able to get the idea that they're not supposed to be in these areas versus spending $250,000 or more. Plus, then you're going to still want an attendant. As soon as this gets done, I feel like that's going to keep getting pushed in the agenda of maintenancing this and litter cleanup and all these other things. So,
Dan.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. A couple quick things. I love the idea of extending that area from our seating, 50,000, such a side note. And I do actually really like that the wire fence, whatever, the cable fence. I think it's a good solution where obviously they can climb it, but anything, you know, we're not going to do bricks, you know, so you can't climb it. I guess I had never envisioned the larger pond needing the fence, but have we had issues with that as well, or do you think?
It's staff's educated guess that as soon as the smaller pond is fenced in, the larger pond right there is so close that they're going to find their way there. So we put together the numbers. We're sharing what we believe will happen. So
this will be the park. I don't know. Last one. It would just be the same park fund that we used to. I know it's dwindling it down quite a bit. But
yep.
Kirsten, then I got something quick.
I'm definitely in support of the attendant. I mentioned something earlier that felt that it was a good idea, a good switch on, you know, having someone that's paid a little less and kind of just around with no expectations of them being the police or an EMT themselves, just kind of an extra set of eyes. Not a bad idea, I don't think. I do want to just like ask some professional opinions of our chiefs on the fence scene, what they believe would be the best solution for this. You know, especially when we're talking about fire rescue, trying to haul people over fences. There needed to be access points, you know, if there's gates, I just wanted to see what you guys thought, if this is something that's necessary or if it would make more sense, as Shanna said, like, we have the signs up now, so we've shared what is supposed to happen, and now we have to kind of see where we go from here.
Chiefs?
Yeah, I can speak on that. Thank you very much, Councilmember. We did talk about that today at the quick meeting that we had out there, and this cable system is very easy to cut through, so which would give us the access to the pond itself if we needed to get down there for whatever reason. And then it was also very easy to replace, and having that extra cable on hand would be something that Public Works would be able to go and string through if we did have to cut that cable system. So it's very, very thin material, and we'd be able to cut through that very quickly. So,
anything to add?
Covered it.
Okay, I'll
I do follow.
Yeah, follow up, then I'll go.
And not to push you, yep. But what is your professional advice on if we need it or not? Not that it's easy to go through or easy to replace. Do you think we need it? Have as we've seen the trend changing, and we all know that seconds make a difference in an emergency.
That's a great follow-up question. Thank you for asking. Today, when we were out there, I witnessed a mom lose her child. For just a brief minute, she just looked away. She couldn't find her child, and she started running frantically through the splash pad to find her kid. And she was just across the path, but that could happen where a 3 or 4 year old could wander down into the pond, and that's worst case scenario, obviously. And my opinion would be that this scenario that we have right here is probably our best option as far as what the safety factor goes. Can we keep everybody out? No, we're not going to, but we can keep the majority of the people out with what we presented here.
Thank you. I'll personally follow suit with what our chiefs think is best case scenario here. So,
yeah, I'll just say real quick, I don't think we need an entire fence. I appreciate your perspective, though. It gives me something to think about. I think extending it a little bit to keep people away from it's fine. It's good. And I would even say, like, if we were going to do the whole thing, then why don't we just extend a little bit as a deterrent and then have a city worker for one season just to educate people? Because after an entire summer of being told don't swim, my guess is that would reduce the amount of people that had to be corralled. So, without your expert opinions being in there, my initial thought is to just extend it as a deterrent, have a city worker there for this duration of the summer and maybe the beginning of next year to educate people until everybody's good to go. And that would be enough, in my opinion, based on what I thought going into this. Real quick, we got to get going. We can come back to this if we need to, but Shanna, you had more.
Seconds matter. We already answered it. So if we put up a fence with a cable and somebody's drowning on the other side of that thing, seconds matter.
Okay.
Can we look to see what other cities do? Are there any similar kind of pond areas, like what we start, like for next time? Or do you think of comparable things out there?
Elk River's right beside the beach.
Do we want to come back? We had to come back anyway.
Yeah,
so
we'll come back, because I had a comment about something that happened in the past about stormwater pond.
Sure. Let's come back to this one. So we're going to go ahead and. Am I doing pause?